Bienvenidos a Crónicas de la Raza. Welcome to La Raza Chronicles. On today's program, we bring you an interview straight from Brazil. We speak to journalist Diogo Antonio Rodriguez around his reporting with Through Me Explica, where he breaks down the attempted takeover of the capital in Brazil on January 8th. We also bring you an interview by our own Nina Serrano with poet laureate Rafael Jesus Gonzalez. He shares his poetry in both Spanish and English. All this and much more, stay tuned. You're listening to Crónicas de la Raza. This is La Raza Chronicles. I'm very lucky to have on the line with me Diogo Antonio Rodriguez. He is a Brazilian journalist. He's been actually a collaborator with Crónicas de la Raza for many, many years now, but it's been quite a while since we've had the opportunity to have you on the program. We're so lucky to have you join us, Diogo. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
So, Diogo, we here in the United States have read some about the news in Brazil. There's been a similar event, attempted takeover of the capital. Been for us in the United States a sense of fear, uncertainty, also a sense of, well, what do we do now? What are the next steps? And in Brazil, I know that you all have had a similar experience just a few weeks ago. I'm hoping that you could talk to us about the January 8 riots and fill us in for what's been happening in Brazil and a little bit about how people are feeling and talking about these events.
Well, of course, it was a pretty big news event, as you would imagine, and it was pretty shocking, to be honest, but not surprising. That's unfortunate because Bolsonaro and his supporters, that includes people who are in Congress, senators, other politicians, business owners, they have been talking about a coup for a while now, ever since he got elected president, and especially when it got closer to the general elections of last year, because Bolsonaro, in a similar fashion to Trump, always said that, you know, if he lost, it would be just because of a fraud, because he was so popular, and that the voting system here in Brazil could not be trusted. So it was something that we were kind of expecting. We just didn't know when it was going to happen. I guess everybody thought that it would happen before Lula took office, but it happened afterwards, which is, you know, very peculiar, but not surprising, as I said. Well, I can do like a little review of what happened, just a brief review, and, you know, just tell you that on January the 8th, which was a Sunday, and it was a very otherwise peaceful day in Brazil. There was nothing happening, no events, nothing. You know, Lula's ceremony had already taken place on January 1st, and he was out of the town. He was in the southeast of Brazil, in the city of Araraquara, looking at the floods that destroyed part of the city there. So Lula wasn't even in town on that day. It wasn't that similar to the Capitol riots that happened in Washington, because there was nothing happening. There was no Congress doing any meetings or anything, voting anything. So that was one difference. Thousands of Bolsonaro supporters had scheduled a protest against Lula on that date. They met in Brasilia, which is the capital, and they walked several miles to the area, which is where Congress, the Supreme Court, and the presidential palace are located. And they walked there and they invaded these three buildings, trashed everything that was inside, broke glasses, broke doors, ruined art pieces, vases, presents that were awarded to Congress and to the presidents of Brazil, not only Lula, but other presidents. And even people defecated on the Congress premises, on the Supreme Court, on the presidential palace. It was something very, very gruesome, very ugly. And it took a while for the police and the army to contain those people and, you know, just throw them out of the palaces. But they eventually did in that same day. And that has, you know, sparked many things on Brazilian politics so far. I mean, it has sparked national debate about what happened. A lot of people are calling it an attempted coup, because those people were calling for, you know, the review of the elections, just overturning the elections, basically. they were attacking the powers, I mean, symbolically and, you know, in fact, they were attacking the buildings, demonstrating their revolt against the politics of Brazil right now. So Lula and other politicians and other people call this a coup, which I think is appropriate, an attempted coup. And because what, you know, everybody thinks they wanted to do was to set in motion a series of protests, of outrage across the country, and eventually create a climate in which Lula could be ousted. So that's basically what happened in terms of, you know, of the events on January the 8th. And there have been many developments since then.
We are speaking to Brazilian journalist Gio Antonio Rodriguez. He has been writing and following politics in Brazil, but also doing deep dives into different issues, breaking them down so we can understand them. I'm hoping, Gio, you can fill us in. Since January 8th, there have been a lot of developments. You know, if you could give us just an overview of some of the big developments since, that would be wonderful.
Of course. Well, that sparked investigations from the federal police, the Supreme Court, the Minister of Justice. And it had a backwards effect for Bolsonaro and his supporters, because it is pretty clear that even though Bolsonaro didn't call for the protests himself on the 8th, what Trump did on January 6th, he was protesting in D.C. at the time. Bolsonaro was out of the country, was in Florida. But the police are going after the people who financed those protests, the people who enabled them, either on social media or in person or were present there. So more than 1,000 people were arrested on that day. Hundreds are being prosecuted and hundreds are still in jail right now because of the preventive prison imprisonment because of their participation in the acts. Many people are being investigated, including the governor of the federal district. His name is Ibanez Rocha. He's suspected of enabling the protests by not ordering the police to stop those people immediately from reaching the center of Brazil's capital. And his former secretary of public safety, Anderson Torres, which took office only at the end of last year, and he was Bolsonaro's former justice minister. So he's very connected politically to Bolsonaro, was part of Bolsonaro's government. He took office in Brasilia only at the end of last year. And the suspicion is that he was put there by the Bolsonaristas because they wanted to do something. They wanted to weaken the security in the federal district in order to allow something like what happened on the 8th to happen. So he's being investigated right now. He's in prison, actually. He was in the United States as well. He was in Florida, as well as Bolsonaro is. And right now he's in prison. And the police, in a raid they did in his home, they found a document that is basically a decree that was supposed to be given out by Bolsonaro, in which he would just basically annul the results of last year's elections and, you know, not make it legal for Lula to take office. So it's pretty clear that there was something going on. It's justified that people were talking about an attempted coup because, you know, there have been some political machinations and arrangements that point to the Bolsonaristas planning all this. And, you know, the people that were in Brasilia on that day, they were on buses. They were transported from other states, from São Paulo state mainly, where I am right now, but from other states in the center west of Brazil. So the federal police is looking into who financed those buses because the protesters didn't have to pay anything. The buses were paid for, as well as the food, the drinks, and even some of the where people stayed. So that's one of the things that is hopefully going to help enlighten what really happened. But in a general way, we can say that, you know, some people were orchestrating this. There is some very strong evidence that it's not Bolsonaro himself, but lots of his close allies were in on this. So that's one of the consequences, because politically Bolsonaro is very isolated right now because this act was so shocking to the whole of Brazilian society that even people and companies that don't usually manifest themselves when something political happened, they had to publish statements and talk about what happened. So Natura, which is a very big cosmetics company here in Brazil, which bought Avon, they had to put out a statement condemning what happened, even though they didn't mention Bolsonaro specifically, but that shows that there is a line that people are not willing to cross anymore, and that Brazilian democracy must be preserved, even though there are a lot of criticisms to Lula. There are a lot of people on, you know, the center right that do not like him, but they're not going to tolerate these attempted coups, the violence that we saw on January 8th for political reasons. So that's, I think, a big backlash for Bolsonaro, because he wanted to be like see himself as the leader, you know, the opposition leader against Lula. But politically, he's very isolated, because even his party, the Liberal Party, which is in Portuguese is the PL, the PL, is considering joining Lula's government right now, even though not agreeing with everything, but they're considering being part of the government. So that shows how much Bolsonaro has lost in this story, even though there is not evidence that he himself was involved directly. But as I said before, he was always calling for coups. He was always saying that, you know, the army should take over. He questioned the legitimacy of our electoral system, our elections. He was one of the only people who did that because he had political interests. So even though he's not directly implicated, but he has sure enabled people to do what they did in the beginning of this month.
That's the voice of Diogo Antonio Rodriguez. He is a Brazilian journalist who follows and goes deep around a lot of different issues in Brazil, but also in the world. We're so lucky to have you here on the line with us. Diogo, is there anything else that you think is important for outsiders, people who perhaps have not been following the news from Brazil closely, to understand about the recent events in the last few weeks?
Yes, I think it's important to talk about the military here in Brazil, because Bolsonaro is a former army captain, and he was always very vocal about his support to the for military dictatorship that we had here in Brazil from 64 to 1985. And he even, when he was voting for the impeachment of former President Dilma Rousseff, he dedicated his vote, yes vote, to Brilhante Ustra, which was a general that tortured Dilma Rousseff when she was in jail during the dictatorship. So that shows how high he thinks of the army here in Brazil, even though they killed people, tortured people, and prosecuted people here in Brazil without cause, and stripped away basic human and political rights of many Brazilians who were opposed to the dictatorship. There's always a fear here in Brazil that the army will support a coup, especially because Lula is a center-left politician, even though he's not a radical, never has been, even when he was in power before. But, you know, we know that there's a part of the army in Brazil who is very conservative. But at the same time, we haven't seen direct involvement from the army in everything that happened, especially on January the 8th. One of the things that the army has been, the general armed forces as well, have been criticized for is for not dismantling some protest camps that were set up right after Lula got elected on October the 30th. Those were people who were asking for a military coup in order for Lula not to take power. And the army never supported them publicly, never said anything, never did anything. But at the same time, they never removed those people from those camps that lasted months. They were only dismantled at the beginning of this month after, you know, what happened on January the 8th. There's been a lot of criticism about that. And also, there is evidence that the army was, at least if they weren't actively involved, at least they were complicit a little bit, because Lula, last Saturday, had just fired the commander of the army and installed a new commander. And this commander had just been nominated in December, so he was the new addition. The Lula himself had designated him to be the army commander, but he interpreted the way he acted as at least a little bit complicit with what happened, and we now have a new army commander. That's always a delicate question because, like I said, we always have a fear that the army is going to try to install a coup or install someone as a dictator because, you know, the left is not very well seen by the army people. But like I said, there hasn't been any evidence of direct involvement. On the other hand, there is something that is concerning a lot of Brazilians, which is the military police. I don't know if people know this, but in Brazil, the police is controlled by the state governments and they are militarized, just like the army, but they have a whole different hierarchical system. They don't respond to the army hierarchically. They're a different corporation, have everything separated from the army. And we know for a fact that the Bolsonarismo has infiltrated lots of military police around the country. Here in São Paulo, in Brasília, and many other countries, in Rio de Janeiro, which is Bolsonaro's home state, that we have, there is evidence of Bolsonaristas infiltrated. So there's something that we're concerned about, because the military police and the federal district basically escorted the protester that trashed the city's capital from their meeting point to the palaces, to the Supreme Court palace and the presidential palace, and they didn't do anything to stop them. They basically escorted. There are images of that happening. The police just going alongside with them. They're not involved in the protest, but they kind of like protected them. They just gave them, you know, they guarded them. So that's one thing that's very concerning, because there is no way to ensure. I mean, there is a way, but it scares everybody in Brasilia, because we know that there is no way that we can count on that police. That's why Lula has ordered a federal intervention on the public safety in Brasilia. And until January the 31st, the federal government is controlling public safety directly through an interventor, which is the Deputy Minister of Justice. So that's something that we're concerned about, because there might be some more infiltrating of Bolsonarismo in the police. We know that federal highway police has also seen some infiltration of Bolsonaristas diehard, but that's something that we're going to have to keep an eye on. And so now it's a matter of seeing what the Lula government is going to do to try to strip away the ideology out of these police forces, and how they're going to just be, you know, an institutional force instead of something that is being manipulated for political purposes. So that's a very tough challenge that the Lula government and the state governments, they're going to have to face in the next years.
We've been speaking to Joe Antonio Rodriguez. He is a Brazilian journalist who's dedicated his work to explaining complex issues and breaking them down so we can understand some of the backstories and some of the essential context that's sometimes left out of crucial reporting. So, Joe, we have a lot of people listening who would love to learn more about what's happening in Brazil, but also find out more about what you're writing and thinking about. How can people connect to your work?
Well, they can find me on meexplica.com. We're also on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter, meexplica. Just look for it. And yeah, it will be a pleasure to having everybody looking at the work there and reading about Brazil. It's all in Portuguese, but I invite everyone to just read meexplica and try to understand what's going on here.
Can you spell that out for us?
Of course. It's meexplica, meexplica, which is explain it to me in Portuguese.
Diogo, it's always such a pleasure to have you on. We're so grateful for your time. We know you're super busy covering so much, and it's been wonderful to have you break down and give some context to these important events. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure talking to you, Julieta, and to La Raza Chronicles.
Welcome to La Raza Chronicles. I'm Nina Serrano. My guest today is Rafael Jesus Gonzalez, the first poet laureate of Berkeley. La Raza Chronicles has always turned to Rafael for the most advanced and profound thinking on events in the Latinx world. He's always promoted bilingualism, demanding that any poem of his read in public or published in print be included in both Spanish and English. He is truly the product of a border town with fluid movement between the two countries and two cultures, the Twin Cities, El Paso, Texas, USA, and Juarez, Chihuahua, Mexico. He also founded the Ethnic Studies program at Laney College. When I visited him in Berkeley, I should have not been surprised that his home straddled the Oakland-Berkeley border. I cannot remember if the cozy kitchen was in Berkeley and the wood-lined living room in Oakland, or if it was the reverse. My best memory of his home was the garden, with wild and fragrant plants. I think it is in the garden that his ideas incubate and blossom. You will hear his poems in two languages, but don't worry, they'll all be translated into English. Welcome, Rafael.
Thank you, Nina. Thank you very much. It's always such a pleasure to be with you. Let us start, because we're so close to the just past Martin Luther King Day. Threnody, hymn, or railing song?
What does threnody mean?
Threnody means a song of lament.
Thank you.
To Martin Luther King Jr. on the 50th anniversary of his murder. I have mined the great one's words for his brightest gems of wisdom to mark the 50 years since his murder. Was it their brilliance that blinded me with tears? Or was it that memory of half a century ago that truly made of April a cruel month, when such a voice for justice is silenced, the whole world suffered a great wound, and truth itself must wear the veils of mourning? Doubly painful this day is that fools and liars sit upon the chairs of power and govern us in a democracy grown rotten, bidden as it was from its beginnings by the worm of slavery and conquest. Justice, but a word frayed, chewed by dogs of greed, hypocrites and knaves. Should we mark this day with a threnody, or with a hymn, or with a railing song to bring us to the streets clamoring for the justice and peace of which it spoke, to come rolling down like water, like a mighty stream? Such is our choice. But as for me, I am here to sing the railing song. Lamento. Himno canto a la acción, a Martin Luther King Jr. en el 50 aniversario de su asesinato. He minado las palabras del grande para las más brillantes joyas de su saber, para marcar los 50 años de su asesinato. Sería su brillantez que me cegó con lágrimas, o sería la memoria hace medio siglo que verdaderamente hizo de abril un mes amargo. Cuando se silencia tal voz por la justicia, todo el mundo sufre una gran herida, y la verdad misma debe vestir velos de luto. Lo doble penoso este día, es que imbéciles y embusteros ocupan las sillas del poder y nos gobiernan. Es una democracia hecha podrida, mordida como la fue desde sus principios, por el gusano de la esclavitud y la conquista. La justicia es solamente una palabra deshilada y mascada por los perros de la codicia, hipócritas y canallas. ¿Debemos marcar este día con un lamento, o con un himno, o un canto de acción para sacarnos a las calles clamando por la justicia y la paz de las cuales habló, que vengan rodando como agua en poderosa corriente? Tales son nuestras opciones. Pero en cuanto a mí, vengo a cantar el canto de la acción.
Thank you. What other poems have you for us?
Awake and breathe. Let us awake and breathe together. Conspire for those of us who could not breathe, for the knee of cruelty and power on their necks, the gun on their temples, murder with a badge, our long-toothed history of injustice in the robes of law. We wake and risking death by illness or police, we flood the streets like water from a mighty stream, or from our isolation race our voices. Enough of death, of torture in the jails, on the border that has no need of walls. Enough of greed that hoards the fruit of our brows and sweat and cuts off the flower of our blood for the sake of power, just to have it, rapes the earth in a blind mad rush to death. Enough of the old worlds of empire, war, plunder, slavery. From what is left, we must create a new world rooted in the heart, in harmony with earth. Awake and breathe, conspire. Despierta y respira. Despertemos y respiremos juntos. Conspiremos para ellos de nosotros que no pudieron respirar. Por la rodilla de la crueldad y el poder en sus cuellos, la pistola en sus sienes, asesinato con placa, nuestra historia de largo diente y de injusticia, en las túnicas de la ley, despertemos y arriesgando la muerte por enfermedad o policía, inundemos las calles como agua de poderosa corriente y desde nuestro aislamiento alcemos la voz. Basta. Basta de muerte, de tortura en las cárceles, en las fronteras, que no necesita muros. Basta de la avaricia que atesora la fruta del sudor de nuestras fuentes y corta la flor de nuestra sangre por bien del poder, solo por tenerlo. Viola la tierra en ciega y demente carrera hacia la muerte. Basta del viejo mundo de imperio. Guerra, saqueo, esclavitud. De lo que puede, tenemos que crear un mundo de nuevo arraigado en el corazón, en armonía con la tierra. Despertemos y respiremos, conspiremos.
Thank you.
Pues sí, Nina, that's where we're at.
Yes.
There are so many issues that we must face and that we must confront with the courage and the insight and the faith of Martin Luther King, the man who rose. After the meal, the fortune cookie yields not a fortune, but its wisdom. The man who rows the boat doesn't have time to rock it, it says. Who can deny its truth? Yet, if the boat needs rocking, must not the man stop rowing? There comes a time when the boat cannot go on. If the man rowing is enslaved and bound with need, the man must lay down the oar and stop his rowing to demand just due. A strike, they call it. A reminder that without the man's rowing, the boat stands still or is taken by the current. Take care that justice is the rudder of the boat, that the rower has a living wage, a break to smell the roses on the shore, else the man must stop his rowing. El hombre que rema. Después de la comida, la galleta de la fortuna da no una fortuna, sino su sabiduría. El hombre que rema el barco no tiene tiempo para sacudirlo, dice. ¿Quién puede negar su verdad? Pero si el barco necesita ser sacudido, ¿no debe el hombre dejar de remar? Llega un momento en que el barco no puede continuar si el hombre remando es esclavizado y atado por la necesidad. El hombre debe dejar el remo y parar su remar para exigir lo merecido. Huelga le llaman, recordatorio de que sin el remar, del hombre el barco para, y o se lo lleva a la corriente. Cuida que la justicia sea el timón del barco, que el remo cubre justo su salario. Un descanso para oler las rosas en la orilla. Si no, el hombre debe dejar su remar.
Thank you.
That's it, Nina. We have to stop the rowing because the boat is going in the wrong direction and we must right it. And we can't right it except by taking action. And that calls for a strike, and it's heartening that more and more of us are waking to it, and that there is a resurrection, a rebreathing of the movement to create unions.
Do you refer to any particular movement of creating unions?
All of them, Nina. All of them. It's hard to pinpoint one. The nurses, the workers for Amazon, the workers for pizza and coffee. You name them. Another thing that we have to confront is, of course, climate change, of which we are suffering much in California this year, this month. Climate change, is it a poem? The Arctic ice melts, the oceans rise, droughts more intense and prolonged, hurricanes and floods more terrible in 500 years everywhere. And some, blind by misfortune, or through stubbornness, will say, what change? There is no change. And others say, we're not responsible. It's God's fault. The leaders bought with the same coin do little here, less there. And the earth remains wounded, healing as it can, demolishing perverse humanity. Cambio climático. Poema es. Se derrite el hielo del Ártico. Suben los mares. Sequías más intensas y prolongadas. Huracanes e inundaciones más terribles. En 500 años, donde quiera. Y algunos ciegos, por desgracia, o por terca voluntad, dicen, ¿cuáles cambios? No hay cambio alguno. Y otros dicen, no somos responsables. Es cosa de Dios. Los líderes, comprados con la misma moneda, hacen poco aquí, menos allá, y sigue herida la tierra, sanándose como pueda, arrastrando con la perversa humanidad.
Thank you.
Sometimes, Nina, hope is stretched out thin, and I'm afraid I ended this poem with less a railing cry than a lament. Pero bueno, Borinquen, Puerto Rico, another stone around the neck of the empire, or rather a fruit that is milked and its blood taken by the empire. Borinquen, Puerto Rico. Borinquen, Borinquen, Isle of Enchantment, Eden of the Taino, until people of another world found you and rich fancied your port. Since then, victim of empire have you been. Through cruelty and disease, your people were destroyed, replaced by Spanish, and later mixed with folk of Africa, brought against their will to grow sugar cane, is sugar made bitter by slavery, and later to fall under another empire of English stock. Extinct the Taino, extinct their language. We cannot eat of the sacred maize without saying their tongue, nor navigate by canoe, nor rest in hammock, nor taste the wava, nor the barbecue, nor make ceremony with tobacco, and not fear and suffer the center of the wind, the heart of heaven, god of the storm, hurricane, anger of the mother goddess, abused and wounded. Her latest expression ironically named for the sweet mother of God. Oh, Borinquen, Puerto Rico, isle of sad enchantment, victim of empire. With love and rage, let us raise our voice in your defense. Borinquen, Puerto Rico. Borinquen, Borinquen, isla de encanto, Edén de los Taínos, hasta que gente de otro mundo te encontraron, y rico se les antojó tu puerto. Desde entonces, víctimas de imperio has sido. Por crueldad y enfermedad se destruyó tu pueblo, reemplazado por el español, y más tarde mezclado con gente de África traídos contra su voluntad, para cultivar la caña hecha amarga su dulzura por la esclavitud, y más tarde caer bajo otro imperio de estirpe inglesa. Extintos los taínos, extinto su lenguaje. No podremos nutrirnos del sagrado maíz sin pronunciar su lengua, ni navegar por canoa, ni descansar en hamaca, ni probar la guayaba, ni la barbacoa, ni hacer ceremonia con tabaco. Y ni temer y sufrir el centro del viento, del corazón del cielo, Dios de la tormenta, huracán, ira de la madre diosa, abusada y herida, su última expresión irónicamente llamada por la dulce madre de Dios. ¡Ay, Borinquén, Puerto Rico, isla de triste encanto! Víctima de imperio, con cariño y rabia alcemos la voz en tu defensa.
Thank you.
Ángel Guerrero, Warrior Angel. To my friend Miguel Gavilán Molina. Saint Michael, Warrior Angel, has the wings of a hawk. His tongue a lance against the lies of the dark forces of injustice and cruelty, bigger than windmills or giants imagined. A Miguel Gavilán Molina. San Miguel Ángel Guerrero tiene alas de gavilán, su lengua una lanza contra las mentiras de las fuerzas oscuras de la injusticia y la crueldad, más grandes que molinos o gigantes imaginados.
Thank you.
You know, one thing must be mentioned here is that one of the voices that we have, one of the strong voices against injustice, accolades to you, accolades to everyone, FKPFA, who keeps it going, who roasts it along. And just to leave us with a shine, Crede Donomancia. In English, Credonomancy. A strange word, huh? It's when coming across a crossroads, coming to a crossroads, the seeker would offer a coin, usually of the latest vintage, to place on the crossroads. Then he or she would place their hands over their ears and continue walking on either of the paths they choose. But after a while, releasing it, and the first thing they heard would be the indication or the guidance for the continuing journey. Credonomancy. Coming to the crossroads, I place a coin of local coinage at the foot of the stele, or pitted stone, or chunk obsidian, and whisper my burning question to Hermes, or Legba, or Tashklipoca, clapping my hands over my ears, cutting all sound, I go my way. When I lower my hands, what I first hear is a bird song and a child's laugh. I thank the God for his answer. Llegando al crucero, pongo una moneda de acunación local al pie de la estela, o piedra picada, o pedazo de obsidiana, y susurro mi pregunta ardiente a Hermes, o Legba, o Tezcatlipoca, poniendo las manos sobre los oídos, cortando todo sonido. Sigo mi camino. Cuando bajo las manos, lo que primero oigo es el canto de un pájaro y la risa de un niño. Doy gracias al Dios por su respuesta. And that's where we are, Nina. We are at a crossroads, a crisis. And we are in very need of signals. What is the signals, you know? The biggest burning question, I think, which is one of the most, which is the basic existential question, is what is it all about? What is it? And I am certain that it's in the bird song and the child's laugh.
Yes, they are symbols of hope.
Of hope and of the reason why we must take the path of justice and of action, the call that we must follow, the call of Martin Luther King and a Buddha and a Lao Tse and a Yeshua of Nazareth. Yeah, the call to action, rooted in compassion and love, which is the only thing that is going to, not assure, but certainly that will make the continuation of life most likely. We are in the Anthropocene, which means that the actions of humanity, of humankind, are what most affects the earth. And we have affected it so severely that our very extinction is in question. Sometimes, you know, I certainly experience it, that hope grows very thin for me. But we must go on with whatever shreds of hope we have and hold each other's hands and encourage each other, because each of us alone cannot make the changes that is needed. It's going to take us coming together. We have to unify. We have to make a union of all like-minded people to bring ourselves together. So let's do it. Let's do it, Nina.
Yes, let's do it.
Just do it.
Yes. And you continue writing poems.
Yeah. We must continue doing poems. Yes. And always remember that everybody is a poem, you know. A poem is essentially a song of praise. So
Well, your poems are wonderful, and thank you so much for sharing them once again.
Well, thank you, Nina. You're most kind, and it's always such a joy to be with you.
Thank you.
Chocolate. con chocolate.
Mueve la cintura, mami, bate chocolate.
Rico chocolate, tu rico sabor.
Mueve la cintura, mami, bate chocolate.
Your body calls to me at midnight. I don't know if this is wrong or right.
Suave que la de seda.
Tú estás más rica con plato de bistec con papas fritas. Tú majitas, ay bendita, morenita. No tengas pena, mi nena, que yo te rasco donde te pica.
Mujer, tú me tienes adicto a la manera que meneas con el ritmo. Cuando primero yo te vi en la disco, por poco me desmayo ahí mismo.
Mujer, tú me tienes adicto a la manera que meneas con el ritmo. Cuando primero yo te vi en la disco, por poco me desmayo ahí mismo.
Been listening to La Raza Chronicles, Crónicas de la Raza. If you'd like to stay up on our news, like us on Facebook at La Raza Chronicles on Facebook. If you want to hear this program or share it with a friend, you can go to soundcloud.com/La Raza Chronicles and share it. If you have any ideas for interviews we should be doing or would like to get involved with our collective, you can email us at larazachronicles@kpfa.org. Muchísimas gracias y buenas noches.